At the end of a hard week, it's great to sit down, take some time off, and watch some football. Game-winning touchdowns on two-minute drives, running backs racing down the sidelines with no one to stop them. There's nothing else like the NFL, and there's no better way to make the games even more exciting than to bet on them. So do the smart thing and go to mybookie.ag. No one gives you more ways to win than they do. MyBookie's got the fastest payouts and better lines than any other sportsbook. Don't forget, where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on, and mybookie.ag is the best in the business. If you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you'll multiply your winnings. And no matter how you bet, the NFL season is the best time of year. Join now and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code LOCKEDON to activate this offer. That's promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid.
You are Locked On Buccaneers, your daily Tampa Bay Buccaneers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Forfeit the game before somebody else takes you out of the frame. Put your name to shame, cover up your face. You can't run the race, the pace is too fast, you just won't last.
What's up and welcome back to the Locked On Bucs Podcast. I am your host for today's episode, David Harrison. And joining me as always is Evan Winter of BucsNation.com. You can follow Evan on Twitter at Evan_Winter. Follow me at DH82_Bucks. Find everything that Evan and I are writing about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers over at BucsNation.com, on Twitter at Bucs_Nation. And you can follow this show, Locked On Bucs, at Locked On Bucs on Twitter. Evan, as usual, we're going to answer a couple of voicemails in this episode, and we're going to talk a little bit about the upcoming game this weekend between the Arizona Cardinals and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as they make their quote-unquote triumphant return back to Raymond James Stadium. I don't know. It's a triumphant return because they're successfully returning home, I suppose. But coming back at 2-6, Evan, as James and I talked about the loss in Seattle, each of us kind of expressed, we didn't really put like hard numbers on it, but we kind of expressed that at this point, it's almost hard to see this team even pulling out, you know, more than a 5-11 record for the third straight season. How do you feel this team? What's your outlook for the second half of the season of this team? Just kind of overall, do you feel like this team can exceed 5-11, or do you kind of see 5-11 as one of the maybe ceilings that this team has above it?
Usually I'll always be one for inspiration and optimism, but I'm just going to be real on this. Yeah, I'm right there with you. 5-11 is about the ceiling. Maybe 6-10. Just every other team they play on their schedule is playing pretty well right now outside of Atlanta and Arizona. And even Arizona has surprised a couple of teams. So you just don't know what Bucs team you're going to get week in and week out. You know, well, you get the one last week that put up 34 points, but had absolutely no secondary and had 11 penalties. Are you going to get the team from Carolina with 6 turnovers, or are you going to get the team that we saw in Los Angeles and in Carolina? I mean, just there's still too many questions that surround this team. So yeah, man, I would say 5-11, 6-10 tops for sure.
I was hoping we see the 50-point outburst, 3-interception Buccaneers this weekend against the Arizona Cardinals. I'd like to see that version.
It would be nice. It would be nice. And yeah. I was never a believer of, well, actually, until I really started writing for Bucs Nation, I never really realized how bad this team is against rookie quarterbacks. Yeah. After you know, the past year and a half, man, I totally believe it. So there's no telling what can happen this weekend, but I hope you're right.
Yeah, man. Rookies and backups. And then, you know, Daniel Jones is just the perfect mix of both. So, you know, it's just bound to happen. But of course, Kyler Murray coming into town. But Evan, before we talk about Kyler and his merry band of Cardinals, we've got a couple of voicemails. So let's go ahead and knock those out.
Let's do it.
Hey, James. Hey, David. It's Dan from Orlando again. And I just had a thought the other day. I think I've thought of it before. I might have called in and talked about it, but why can't the Bucs go after Eric Berry? Like, he's a free agent. He is a proven leader. He was that way anyways for the Chiefs. He's an all-pro player. Granted, he's a little bit older. I think he's like 31 or 32 years old, but he could be that veteran leader that we need in the secondary. And, yeah, I'd like to hear your thoughts on that, if that's even remotely possible. And if we do sign Winston again, is it possible that they do it to a team friendly deal, where it's like, I don't know, like $18 million for 1 year and then an optional second year or something like that. So that way we're not breaking the bank for him. So yeah, thanks guys. Like,
all right, Dan, appreciate the phone call. And Evan, you know, people are, we talked about it as a group, as a site on podcast, on your podcast, veteran leadership in the secondary. The youth of the secondary is something that was problematic. It was worrisome to many people that observed the team from the outside looking in. And obviously in this season, it's become an issue that is, has glared its head over and over and over again. Bruce Arians talked about it today, about the fact that Vernon Hargraves is the elder statesman in that secondary group and how that's a problem. But to hear the head coach say that after also coming out earlier in the season saying that the secondary is quote unquote fixed and making the decision in tandem with the general manager, Jason Light, because you have to believe that Bruce Arians and Jason Light are working as a pair. It's not one feeding the other a roster that the other one's got to play with. I mean, from the lack of, you know, either trading or signing veteran cornerbacks or going out there. I mean, again, the deal that Morris Claiborne ended up signing was very affordable. So, you know, for the Buccaneers to not be able to pay that, maybe he wanted more money to play for the Bucs because of the kind of their status in the league. I don't know. But the fact that they don't have a veteran leader, and then the fact that, you know, losing a young cornerback in Carlson Davis leads to you starting a younger cornerback and more inexperienced cornerback in Jamel Dean, more unprepared cornerback to take on that kind of a task in Seattle. Really, I mean, if you really think about it, Evan, I mean, agree with me or not, like if Carlton Davis plays that game, it's actually, for all the struggles that he's had and all the problems he's actually had himself, it's possible when you talk about a game that goes overtime and ends the way it did, it's possible the Buccaneers actually have a chance of coming out with that victory if Carlton Davis doesn't get injured in pregame. What do you think about bringing a guy like Eric Berry in for the rest of this season? He is still on the market. He does obviously have his reputation. Do you think that's something that can fix these problems at this point in the season? And if so, do you think it's worth it?
I have no idea how his contract situation would work. And I think looking on spotrack.com, I think you'd have to pay him around $6 million. But then again, I have no, I think he's out of football right now. I don't even know if he's on a team. He's played three games since the start of 2017. So I'm not really entirely sure where he's at this point in his career, but he's 30 years old. He'll be 31 at the end of December, so right at the end of the season. Man, at this point, why not? Sure. I mean, just go for it. See what can happen. On SpotRack, it says he's due $8 million next year. I don't know if that's true or not. Maybe you can rework some kind of deal, especially if he plays well. But yeah, the Bucs need something to happen back there. Obviously, this team isn't developing at the pace that they would like it to. They need some kind of boost. And they need it quick. So I would not honestly mind for them to give him a trial run. Plus, he's a Tennessee Vol, so, you know, I'm going to love that.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Eric Berry himself. So this, for me, this has two parts to it, right? It's Eric Berry, and then, like I said, the value it brings to the team. And for me, Eric Berry himself, I think he's an inspirational guy. He's obviously a leader that a locker room can bond around and everything else. He's been in the league for a really long time. Coach Arians kind of talked about part of the problem with this secondary has been their ability to execute in zone. And usually when you have a defense that's struggling to execute in zone, it's understanding assignments and it's communicating reads. So that kind of speaks against some of the things that secondary was fixed, because in preseason and in rookie mini camps and everything else, we heard all about how this unit was communicating really well and they were executing really well and they were fluid and they were in sync and everything else. And then really starting, I mean, The most obvious area, and Coach Arians even brought up the same example, is that second half against the New York Giants. And it's just like ever since then, the communication has just kind of slowly been dwindling lower and lower and lower to where now, I mean, that's I gave Coach Bowles a hard time earlier this week about that Seattle game, wondering why he wasn't giving Jamel Dean help, why he wasn't moving into zone coverage and moving safeties over the top and everything else. And come to find out, well, it's because this unit hasn't been executing zones any better than they've been executing man. So when you have a defense that isn't executing in something as complicated as his own can be, then you simplify things. So in actuality, the coaches did take measures to make things better and easier for the defense. It's just, it still didn't work. So I don't know if I have to fully retract my comments against quote unquote Todd Bowles this past week, but you know, at least it's good to have an answer of kind of understanding the mindset of the coaching staff in those moments in that game. And it definitely adds some clarity to the situation. But my big thing about Eric Berry, right? So he's a veteran. He's smart. Can he improve the communication? Possibly he could. I mean, he'd have to learn the lingo. He'd have to learn Todd Bowles' defense himself as well. And then I kind of wonder, I mean, he's turning 31 years old. Like you said, he's had some injuries. You know, I don't see him as a rangy free safety. He's got to be an in-the-box guy. He's got to be a safety who's going to kind of be there in the middle intermediate part of the field and all that stuff. He's not a guy that you could turn and cut loose to say, okay, stay on top of Tyler Lockett at this point in his career. And Jordan Whitehead's not the problem. You know what I mean? Like, Jordan Whitehead has been probably the strongest member of the secondary up to this point. And at some point, I kind of worry if Jordan Whitehead is looking like an eagle because of the saying, it's easy to look like an eagle when you're surrounded by chickens. You know what I mean? Is Jordan Whitehead really, has he been this good this year? Or is it just he looks so much better compared to the guys around him? And this is going to kind of go into the next voicemail a little bit. But I look at the future of this team, and Trevor Sikkema has kind of been talking about this. And this is really kind of the approach I expected this coaching staff to have entering the year, was an evaluation year. Most first-year coaches kind of get that evaluation year. You look at John Gruden with Oakland last year, you know, I don't want to say cutting or get, you know, kind of getting rid of the guys who maybe didn't want to get onto his program, didn't want to fit in with what he was trying to do. You know, the words came out that Khalil Mack flat out said, I'm not playing for John Gruden. So that's why they moved him. Amari Cooper, we haven't really got a lot of backstory on that, but, you know, there's obviously some reason that they decided to move him. And now John is kind of moving forward with a roster that, for the most part, he wants. You know, obviously, Gerrion Conley was a guy who had problems last year, and they've since moved on from him. But you see that they're kind of on an uptick. They're not quite there, but they're kind of moving upwards and forward. Look at Miami. They did the same thing. That coach came in there, said, okay, what do we got? Let me figure out who I can win with, who I can't win with. They've moved a lot of big pieces during this season, and the plan moving forward is to get pieces in there they want. But then you have the opposite side of the coin, where the Buccaneers seem to have landed, and you look at, like, the Jets, like Adam Gase. I mean, he's struggling with the New York Jets for a lot of what I view from the outside to be logical reasons why he would be struggling. But a lot of people in New York are already calling for this dude to be fired because their expectations were that Adam Gase was going to come in. They already had a strong defense. Now he was going to fix the offense and take this team to new heights. The Buccaneers kind of had the same thing. But Evan, correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of these expectations of this coaching staff being able to come in and maybe replicate that 10-6 first year that Bruce Arians had in Arizona, or at least get a winning record, was spurred on by the coaching staff themselves.
I mean, yeah, they kept talking about winning now. Bruce Arians said that the secondary was fixed at one point during the offseason, which is definitely not true. They've definitely put out the waves or the feeling, so to say, that they are here to win now, that this is supposed to happen now, and that they're supposed to come in and fix everything. There's definitely no mistake on reading in between the lines on that one at all.
Right, and then here we sit at 2-6, and, you know, I think we all kind of agree that this team, you know, we've talked it, you know, till we're blue in the face. This team could be, you know, 4-4. They could be 6-2. You know what I mean? There's a lot of coulda, woulda, shouldas, and Greg Allmax tweeted out today that as much as this team could be a better record, two more yards given up against Carolina Panthers, and they could be 1-7. So,
yep, exactly.
You know, this team is on both ends of the spectrum right now, and I've kind of said it on this show too, where I feel like right now where the Buccaneers are at 2-6 midway through the season with the schedule they have coming up and the kind of the way they've been kind of beating themselves is it's almost got to turn into the rest of the year where Bruce Arians sits down and says, look, guys, this is the time. Everything I said during the preseason and during the offseason, that's the team that we want. That's the team that we want to be, and that's the team that I believe you can be. You have to show me that you can be part of becoming that team. And if you can't, and that's what I said in the show, is you're one of the ones calling me a liar, right? You look at guys like Vernon Hargraves. He's making you a liar right now, coach. And there's some other pieces. You look at MJ Stewart. I mean, if MJ Stewart's not gone from this team in the offseason, then I don't know what they're doing with him, because healthy scratch for the last 2 weeks. I don't expect him to be playing this week. You know what I mean? Just fully kind of expect that guy to be moving on. So there's another guy who's making you a liar. Get rid of the guys that are making you a liar, at least as many of them you can, without completely depleting your roster, because you have to keep some semblance of a roster. But get rid of the guys who are making you a liar, and then bring in more guys next year that are going to make everything you're saying this team could be actually a reality and actually a thing. And that takes me to the second part of the Eric Berry question. Eric Berry is not a future solution. Like, the best thing that Eric Berry could do is come in and make this team better this year. But is bringing Eric Berry, making this team better this year, going to make this team go on an 8-game run and finish 10-6? I don't think so.
No, definitely not. No
so
way.
So if you finish 9-7, like let's say Eric Berry comes in and you fall one game shy of running the table and going 10-6, you're going to 9-7. And 9-7 hasn't been a playoff record in the NFC for quite some time, at least a wild card record for quite some time. And I mean, unless the New Orleans Saints completely just fall off the face of the earth, they're winning this division. So the Buccaneers are solely like their chances of making the playoffs are at a wild card, and they're slim to none because you basically got to win out to go 10-6. And then even at 10-6, you're probably going to need a tiebreaker or two that you may not end up with to get in anyway. 9-7 is not going to get the job done. So Eric Berry is not going to make you a playoff team. You agree?
I agree. I hate to do this to you though, but the Eagles were 9-7 when they made the playoffs last year.
That's trash. Okay. So even if you go 9-7, so maybe you make the playoffs at 9-7. I don't have the current standing sitting in front of me, but I don't know, man. But even okay, so let's go 9-7. Let's play devil's advocate. Can this team go 6-2 down the stretch?
No.
With Eric Berry. Like
no, definitely not.
This team 6-2 down the stretch.
No.
Absolutely not. Because again, Jordan Whitehead's not a free safety. He's not a free safety for a reason. Eric Berry can no longer play free safety at the level that anybody would want him to. They're both strong safeties. You can't have two strong safeties on the field. You gotta have somebody that can cover back there. The best he could do is kind of bring in, I mean, if you're gonna do that, just hire the guy as a defensive consultant, right? And Andre Johnson is doing that for the Houston Texans right now. He's a retired wide receiver, but there he is as an offensive consultant, quote unquote. You know what he's doing? He's a second wide receivers coach. You know what I mean?
Yeah, just so another pair of eyes. Another pair of eyes. Yeah, I'm right there with you.
Exactly. So, I mean, if you want to do that, just do that. Then he has to take up a roster spot. You don't have to worry about all that stuff and everything else. Plus, one of Eric Berry's physical ailments right now is one that's not getting fixed. He's got a bone growth on his heel that's never going away. It's going to cause him constant discomfort, if not pain. And it's not going to be a thing as far as I'm concerned. Now to the second part of Dan's question, Jameis Winston. And I know we're going to have these conversations over and over again as the rest of the year continues. But as it stands right now, Evan, if we copy and paste the first 8 weeks to the second 8 weeks, right, you look at Jameis Winston, a lot of touchdowns, a lot of turnovers. Some of the turnovers aren't his fault. You know, without actually going one by one, I'd probably say 60% of the turnovers his fault, 40% maybe. If we copy and paste the first 8 games to the second 8 games, I would say probably like San Francisco, you can really look at and say Jameis, you know, had to shoulder a lot of blame for that one. Carolina, definitely. And then Tennessee, I think, is kind of a mixed bag. If we see the same Jameis in the second 8 games that we saw in the first 8 games, where do you fall in his future? What would you want the Buccaneers to do as it relates to his future?
It also depends on what Jameis wants to do, but let's just go ahead and assume Jameis wants to.
That is very
stay.
True.
Let's just go ahead and assume he wants to stay. Let's assume, you know, he's willing to cooperate, as weird as that sounds, with negotiations. I would like for them, honestly, to do a franchise tag next year. I'd like to see how they attack the draft because I'm still not really sure about this coaching staff right now. I like what Todd Bowles has done the most. I feel pretty safe with him. I mean, we kind of knew the secondary was going to be an issue coming in. They looked great during training camp, but obviously training camp and the regular season are two completely different things. I would say franchise tag him because, I mean, if you extend him to a multi-year deal, SpotRack has him right at around $24 million a year. The franchise tag is going to be about $28 or $30 million. You're talking about a mere $4 to $6 million difference in a year where you're going to have pretty good cap room. You've just got so many holes to fill at other places. I don't think giving him a multi-year deal would be the best thing long-term. Because here's the thing, if he comes out and he's just like this next year as well, then you load up on draft picks, not having to draft a quarterback. And let's say he's the same guy, you finish 5-11 or 6-10, then you can then get your quarterback in 2021. And then you'll have better players around him because you didn't use a pick on a quarterback the year before, if that makes any sense, which I think Tampa Bay's going to take a quarterback next year no matter what, even if Jameis is around. I think they'll take somebody late, but that's a conversation for another day. I would say franchise tag him next year for sure.
I agree with every single thing you just said, including the drafting a quarterback later in the draft. I have my eyes set right now on like fourth, fifth round.
Yeah,
to pull the trigger on that guy.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah. Especially if Jason Light can execute a trade, gaining them a pick they didn't have before, pull the trigger on a quarterback with that pick. You didn't have it in the first place, so you're literally not losing anything. I will tell you this. I will bring a little bit of a different angle to this as well. And, of course, there's a lot of time between now and then. But with the current CBA situation going on, and I know there's renegotiations happening and everything else and so on and so forth, and there's time between there's, you know, a potential work stoppage. Jameis Winston getting franchise tag actually kind of helps him because I think everybody expects the players to get, you know, usually when these things happen, the owners kind of get a little bit more in the ways of making revenue, but the players usually get a little bit more in contract stability, security, and making money. So if the players come out in the next CBA with the ability to make more money or with a little bit more power, like, you know, where you don't see a situation where how many times did Kirk Cousins get tagged by the Redskins? Like 3 times, I think, in a row.
Yeah.
Where you see that a team can't do that sort of thing, you know, where they're literally playing year in, year out. And if a quarterback has a bad injury, then he's basically screwed for the rest of his life. I mean, screwed with a whole lot of millions of dollars, got it. But still, you know, as far as career security goes, Jameis actually might be a little bit, you know, if the Buccaneers are kind of saying, hey, dude, like, we're kind of leaning towards the franchise tag instead of offering you a multi-year deal, Jameis might actually be well-served. He's young enough, resilient enough, healthy enough to take that franchise tag and play on that franchise tag, because then the new CBA will either go into place or there will be a work stoppage. If there's a work stoppage, he's young enough to be able to survive that work stoppage and come in with plenty of career ahead of him. He's not one of those age veterans that's got to worry about, man, is my last year possible in the NFL being wasted on strike or locked out? And then he can come back and he can get his next contract, whether it be with the Bucs or anybody. He can get that next contract under the new CBA rules, which he can then leverage to get a better deal. So just kind of throwing that out there on top of everything else, kind of with your angle of, does Jameis even want to resign, which, you know, nobody knows and nobody's really going to – he's not going to say. So – Evan, we got one more voicemail, so let's hit that real quick, and then we'll get to a little bit of Arizona Cardinals.
Hi, guys. JT from Texas. I was wanting a new topic. I'm tired of talking about all the losing. Do y'all think there's going to be any Pro Bowlers on this team this year? If so, list them. Give us something to hope for. Y'all have a good day. Go Bucks.
All right. We appreciate the call and appreciate the opportunity to talk about something that is not Jameis Winston's contract and this team losing. We will get right back to that here in a minute. But, Evan, let's start offense. I think that's the easiest way to go. Let's start offense. Who do you think is going to the Pro Bowl from the offense?
Mike Evans, number one, obviously. He's already got the name. He's got the stats. Man, I really want to say Chris Godwin, but I just don't think he's there quite yet. If he ends up finishing a top two or three receiver like he has been for the most part of the season – then yes, I will say yes. But if he does not finish in the top three in receiving yards or stats, receiving stats in general, then I'm going to say no. So I'm just going to say Mike Evans, because I don't think Godwin's going to finish top three. I like what he's done. I think he's great. I think he's going to continue to do well. I just don't think he's going to continue to sustain what he was doing earlier in the year. Evans, and then, man, I want to say Ali Marpet. I just don't think he has the name either. But I think getting 2/3 of the Pro Bowl vote by coaches and players.
Yeah, I mean, the fans have a voice, but it's
the third.
Yeah.
Okay, so the coaches know. Coaches and players know about Ali Marpet. So I'm going to say Mike Evans and Ali Marpet on offense.
Okay. Yeah, I like Ali, obviously. Mike, I think, again, as long as he continues with the trend or with the kind of the pattern of the season, he should be fine. And then Chris, yeah, it's going to be – it's the question is going to be this level of production. And – I have a lot of confidence in Chris, but there are some tough defenses coming up. There are some tough matchups coming up, but there's also some soft ones, man. I mean, like those two games against the Falcons, basically it's one of those situations where as an individual player, Chris has got to cash in on those quote unquote soft targets. And then he's got to pull through with maybe a better than expected performance in some of the other areas. So I think he's got a shot, but yeah, I mean, if I had to put money on it, I would definitely put money on Mike. I'd be willing to put more money on Ali at this point, and then, you know, I'd kind of put that loose spare change on Chris at this point. But yeah, I think those three definitely have an opportunity. And I don't think anybody else. That's probably pretty much it. On defense, you got anybody outside of Shaq?
No, that was going to be my only guy.
Yeah, I think Shaq is it. I mean, secondary is not getting anybody. The defensive front, I mean, they've played better than their stats would tell you if you just kind of stat scout them or whatever. But again, part of it is, you know, I mean, Ndamukong Suh's got the reputation he's got for a reason. Vita Vea, you know, unfortunately, you're going to have to come up with some stats to start getting a lot of respect as a second-year player on a losing team, especially when you're a losing team is by and large losing because of the defense. Even if it is the secondary most more than anything, you're still on a losing defense. So it's going to take some time. So, yeah, I think that we agree there. So Mike Evans and Shaq right now are probably your shoe-ins. Again, Shaq still, I mean, he's got it. Like, if he falls off the end of the year and finishes with 13, 14 sacks, I think, what has he got like now, like 12 and a half, 10 and a half?
He's at 10 and a half. And here's the thing too, man. I mean, hell, he could finish with 15, 16 sacks on the year and not make it depending on what the other people do. In the top 15, 11 of the top 15 NFL sack leaders, and Clay Matthews and Dante Fowler round out the bottom of the list with 6 sacks. So they're 4.5 behind. Mm-hmm. 11 of the top 15 sack leaders are from the NFC. So, Nice. So he could, I mean, depending on what these guys end up doing, he could have a really good season, still get passed up just because, you know, it's kind of like the Heisman. You start strong early in the season and kind of just fade away as the year goes on.
Yeah, I mean, when you're on pace to have 21 sacks and you finish with 15, that means the second half of your season was kind of a whimper, you know? So.
Yeah, especially if you're on a losing team too, so.
Yep, so we'll see. I mean, I think Mike is probably the only 100% confident guy that we have, but there are some options out there, so there's some guys to look for. You know what I mean? Those are some names, of course, to root for and pull for as we move forward. But speaking of moving forward, Evan, let's talk Arizona Cardinals and let's talk Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So what are your just give me kind of your first thoughts, just your initial thoughts when you think about this matchup coming up. What is the first things that go through your mind?
The running game for the Cardinals, stopping their running game. They have one of the most unique running games I think I've ever seen. They're ranked fourth in efficiency by Football Outsiders, so they can get it done. And on defense, stopping Chandler Jones. You know, the Bucs have shown, I mean, they can isolate guys. They did it with Jadeveon Clowney last week. They did it with Aaron Donald against the Rams. They know how to isolate a defense that relies on a singular good pass rusher. So I think they'll be able to stop him. It'll be interesting to see how they do it, but those are definitely the first things that come to mind when I think of offense and defense for this team.
Yeah, man, I know a lot of people, like, you know, casual fans, people don't pay attention to the Cardinals. You know, obviously we studied the Cardinals a little bit leading up to this matchup. We'll continue to study them as we get closer to Sunday. You know, the first thing you think of course, is a guy like Kyler Murray, number one overall draft pick, you know, young quarterback, Heisman winner, all that stuff. Larry Fitzgerald, Larry Legend, of course. And then, you know, there's the whole thing about it being Bruce Arians' former team and all that stuff. But you talked about, man, running game, whether it's David Johnson, Chase Edmonds. Really, I mean, and Kenyon Drake even, you know what I mean? Like, you're right. Like, their running game, their running attack is very creative and it's very good at emphasizing what they do well from a roster standpoint. And that offensive line, man, entering the season, I went back and looked, and entering the season, this offensive line was the third worst graded offensive line by PFF, and they've had some injuries and they've had some replacements and they've moved, shifted a couple things. And right now, talking about some more advanced stats, the Arizona Cardinals are averaging 3.2 yards per carry before contact right now this season.
Yeah, that's
pretty
insane.
Only one team has more, and it's the Baltimore stinking Ravens.
That's wild, man. That's absolutely wild.
And they're tied. So 3.2, real quick, 3.2 ties them with the Carolina Panthers. So the team with Christian McCaffrey has as many yards per carry before contact as the Arizona Cardinals, and the only team with more yards per contact or yards per carry before contact are the Baltimore Ravens. So that kind of illustrates, like, adds to what you already said about the running game and just how effective this Cardinals running game has been.
Well, yeah, and if you look at using another advanced stats formula or site or whatever you want to, or source, for lack of a better word, they're eighth. Football Outsiders has them eighth in stuffed ranked, which is good, which means they don't get stuffed the line of scrimmage often. Got them eighth in second line yards, which means gains of, I believe, 5 to 7 yards. Either way, it's the middle level yards. And then they're 10th in open field yards, which is basically anything beyond 10 yards. So yeah, man, they know how to hit the holes. They know how to create space. And this is what's the best part about it, is so adjusted line yards are just total yards created by the offensive line for any runner, whether it's a quarterback, running back, whatever. Their adjusted line yards are 4.34 yards. Their adjusted running back yards are 4.61. So yeah, it's pretty wild, man. It's definitely a ground game, like you said, that they're going to have to monitor. They're going to have to figure out a way to get to these guys quickly before they get to this open space. And honestly, this could be a game where we kind of see this run game let us down, or this run defense let us down, because the past 2 weeks we've seen big chunk gains. I believe the Seahawks went over 100 yards rushing for the first time this season. I believe they're the first team to do that against the Bucks. And this might be that game where they just kind of fall apart. It's kind of trending that way. Don't want to be the, you know, a bad omen or anything like that, but you never know, especially with this team.
Yeah, and I mean, you hate to say it, man, but I mean, look at all the ways that this team has lost. So far, they've lost because receivers dropped passes and ran wrong routes. They've lost because the quarterback turned the ball over. They've lost because the offensive line couldn't stop anybody. They've lost because the running game couldn't carry their weight. They've lost because the secondary couldn't carry their weight.
Miss kicks.
The only thing they haven't done yet is lost because the rush defense couldn't carry their weight.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, they've lost because the coaches got outcoached. You know what I mean? So, I mean, the kicker has already cost them a game. So, I mean, they've lost in like almost every single way you can think of, except for getting run all over all day. And they're facing the team, or one of the teams at the top of the NFL that can do that very well. And I'll tell you, so while we're keeping on this stat here, you want to take a guess as to how many yards per carry the Buccaneers average before contact?
I'm going to say like 1.8.
You're cheating. I don't know how you're spying on my computer screen, but you are. That's exactly what it is 1.8 yards per carry.
It makes total sense.
Yeah, which is definitely bottom half of the league, bottom 10th of the league, or bottom 10 teams in the league. And I'll tell you, man, and the Arizona Cardinals, too, they've run 58 times on first down so far this season, which is, without having to count every single one of them, is top 10 in the NFL. They're running more than most of the teams in the NFL. And I'll tell you something I've been surprised too, because, Evan, we're kind of guilty of it, too. A lot of people have been complaining about how much the Buccaneers run on first down. They've ran 42 times on first down, which is definitely in the bottom half of the league. And that was a surprising stat to me. So just kind of an interesting little
tidbit
of information there. The stats don't necessarily support some of our complaints about the play calling. But outside of the run game, Evan, right? So I'm looking at stats, and I'm looking at, you know, measurables and everything else. And outside of that, man, like, this is a game, right? You talk about the run defense. This is a game that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the 2019 Tampa Bay Buccaneers, as we've seen them so far, is built to not only win, but dominate. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, this should be a complete game from top to bottom. We said the same thing about the New York Giants, and it was a complete first half from top to bottom.
Yeah.
Not so much for the second half, but yeah, man, Tampa Bay should be able to take care of it. I mean, Arizona has a worse defense than the Seattle. Tampa Bay hung 34 points on them on the road in one of the loudest environments, one of the most hostile environments you can play in. So it should be a game. I don't necessarily know if I'm going to be looking for a blowout, you know, 14-point win or anything like that, but this should be a game that Tampa Bay controls. There might be a little scare early on, or there might even be a little scare a little bit later in the game, but Tampa Bay should have firm control of this game. And, I mean, dude, if they lose this one, then you're talking about some serious, serious questions. But again, we can always discuss that after, if that happens. So let's just stay on track about them playing well. But like you're saying, man, the Arizona defense has a lot of issues. And Tampa Bay, I mean, the offense is still playing well. The offensive line looked a lot better with Alex Capua coming back. I mean, they did give up 2 sacks, but one of the sacks was Donovan Smith sacking Jameis Winston's elbow. So, I mean, you know, it is what it is. But they should be able to really take advantage of some holes. They're going to obviously run the ball. This really feels like a Ronald Jones and Chris Godwin game, because obviously they're going to have Patrick Peterson probably shadowing Mike Evans. Really feels like that's going to open up some routes for Godwin. And then Ronald Jones really feels like he can take advantage of an aggressive Cardinals front.
Yeah, man, most definitely. And I'll tell you, just to add one more topic, or one more piece to that whole thing, the Arizona Cardinals are averaging a league most 39 yards per drive to opposing offenses right now. That's almost 40 yards they're allowing per drive, ladies and gentlemen. So if you're starting on your own 25 yard line from a touchback, you're talking about getting in field goal range on average against this defense. So definitely a game that stat-wise, and you look at advanced stats, and you look at the deeper stats and everything else, and sometimes they can be misleading, especially with the way the actual game goes. This is a game that the Cardinals' strength is running. The Buccaneers' strength is run defense. The Cardinals' weakness is pretty much everything else, and the Buccaneers' strengths definitely match up well against the Cardinals' weaknesses. So in theory, it's a game that they should definitely take handedly. I don't know if I'm going to be predicting a blowout. I have the benefit, though, of waiting until tomorrow to give my prediction. Evan, you don't have that benefit. So we are running long on time, and I promise you that we would try to keep this as within the time frame as we possibly can. So I'll tell you what, in one fail swoop, give me one key player from the Buccaneers to a key to their success. Give me a key player in Arizona, i.e. if the Buccaneers lose, it's going to be because this guy goes off, and then give me your final score prediction.
All right, so Chris Godwin for the Bucs, like I said, just really feels like a game. He's had a couple of down games. I mean, he still played well in those two games, but they just haven't been what he's been over the previous, what, six games before that. Really feels like a game for him, a really good matchup for him. And then on the Cardinals, it's obviously going to be Kyler Murray. I mean, it's all going to depend on what he can do. If he can find room against this Bucs defense, then just watch out because the dude's absolutely explosive. He's played a lot better than I thought he was going to this year. I can see why the Cardinals took him number one overall right now. You know, we'll have this conversation a couple years later down the road and see where I stand then. But right now, he looks really good. And then final score prediction, man, I'm going 34-24 Bucs. Like I said, don't really think it's going to be that big of a blowout. Could be something where Tampa Bay has a touchdown lead the whole game, but it's something where the Cardinals aren't crossing the 50, you know, something like that. And then Tampa Bay maybe kicks a field goal at the end of the game to just put them away for good. But 34-24 is what I'm going to roll with. Like we've been saying, Tampa Bay should find plenty of room to work against this defense.
Final question before I let you go. If you need to stream a quarterback this weekend, do you stream Jameis Winston?
Yes, I definitely would. I'd even think about picking up O.J. Howard. You never know. I mean, Bucs got to have somebody making plays, and Breshad Perriman just got lucky last weekend. But, yeah, man, I would definitely pick up Jameis. This definitely feels like a game where he's going to have some good stats for you in fantasy land.
Yep, I agree. I'll tell you what, I picked up O.J. Howard because the guy who had him in my league from the draft finally dropped him, so I picked him up.
I picked him up too.
And I'm starting him because Evan Ingram is my actual starting tight end and he's no longer playing this weekend. So I'm definitely rolling with OJ. I'm going to pretend it's because I'm extremely confident in what he's going to do, but in reality, it's because I don't have any other choice.
yeah, I've got a Zach Ertz. That's usually my guy, but he's nice. On bye this week. And yeah. I've got Jonnu Smith, but I picked up OJ just in case Delanie Walker comes back this week.
I like Johnny, man. For the future of the Titans, I like.
Oh, he's
like
great. He's great, man. He's great. But no Titans talk on here. I promised I wouldn't.
All right, guys. Evan, we appreciate your time. As always, ladies and gentlemen, James and I will be back tomorrow, potentially with a special guest. He has the flu if he's listening. You know who you are. We hope you're feeling better. If you are, then we'll have him on the show as well. And that'll be a fun time. It always is. If not, it'll just be James and I talking about Arizona Cardinals and Tampa Bay Buccaneers this weekend. I will be in Tampa this weekend at the stadium covering this game for BucsNation.com. So please check out everything that we are all doing there. But looking forward to getting back down to Tampa this time of year and hopefully getting to see Bruce Arians get a win over his former squad. Until then, everybody have a safe rest of your day. This episode, by the way, has been brought to you partly by Peloton, who is offering you right now $100 off of accessories when you purchase the Peloton bike and get a great cardio workout at home. Go to onepeloton.com. Use the promo code LOCKED to get started. That's LOCKED. And thank you so much for joining us right here at Locked On Bucs.
Everybody hurts sometimes. Everybody hurts someday. But everything gonna be alright. Gonna raise a glass and say, hey. Here's to the ones that we got. Cheers to the wish you were here, but you're not. Cause the dreams bring back all the memories of everything we've been through. Toast to the ones here today. Toast to the ones that we lost on the way. Cause the drinks bring back all the memories. And the memories bring back your. Memories bring back your.